This is a topic very dear to my heart. The artistic pursuit and its relationship to spirituality is essentially what this issue of our magazine is about. And I think I told you this, but I had bought your book some time ago. But, you know, it ended up buried with the thousands of books on my Kindle. And then I saw you again and I thought, oh, yeah, we really need to interview Chris for this issue because this appears to be what you've dedicated your life to, the spiritual artist.
Well, it got there somehow.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Life leads itself to you sometimes, right?
Most definitely. I want to start by asking you to speak a little bit about how you what you understand to be a spiritual artist.
It has evolved. My definition of a spiritual artist has definitely evolved. And so, as we were discussing, as I've journeyed forward and started writing this book and being aware of my process, as I started this process, I've evolved it more and more. But what I've realized for me, what a spiritual artist is a person that there is the literal traditional description of artist. But what a spiritual artist is for me is a person that focuses on the spiritual plane. So it's how do we focus on the spiritual plane and how does that affect what we manifest? So my target audience is often artists and creative people, but actually what I teach could be applied to anybody that is a living spiritual being, which we all are. So,
okay, so I love that. As a general definition, a spiritual artist is someone whose focus of attention is on the spiritual dimensions of life. And then that focus of attention is maybe consciously and maybe unconsciously or both informing and shaping the expression of their art.
Right. We are all creators. Matter what, we're all creators. And the question is, are you a conscious creator? Are you aware of what you're creating? Are you tuned in? Are you intuitive? Or are you simply creating by default? And so a spiritual artist to me is someone that realizes that there is an intention that has to be brought to the process and that you intentionally have to approach creativity to get the most from it and what you want. Yeah.
So that's interesting. How would you describe your own process? Right, you're bringing intention to a process. What is your process, your creative process?
Well, it's interesting. I never really watched my process until probably about 5 years ago. I had an art mentor in Santa Fe, and I go to her, and I would do these week-long retreats. And one day she said to us, I want you to watch your process. And up until that point, I was probably what you would call an unconscious artist. You know, I just did stuff. I would put materials on the canvas. So specifically, I stepped back, and not only did I watch how I apply, you know, the paints, what brushes I use, how do I layer a piece of art on canvas, but I also started on the spiritual side. How do I manage my thoughts when I'm doing it? How do I manage my consciousness when I do it? How am I managing my emotions, my belief systems, my judgment? All those things come into play. And so there's, you know, in my book, The Spiritual Artist, I kind of break it down. Each chapter is about one way that I focus on entering that process.
Right.
And I'll give you the most obvious, I think, for me is I started recognizing that when I paint, there was a lot of judgment. And as an art teacher, I see that in my students. They go in and they stand up and they put a mark down on the paper, and immediately their little self, their ego self, starts critiquing it. Is it a pretty mark? Is it good enough? Does it represent who I am? Does it show that I'm experienced? And so when they go into that place of judgment, they step away from the actual process. So for me, the process is being in this, like Eckhart Tolle would say, being the watcher. Just putting the paint down and then dancing with it, you know, reacting to it without the judgment, without the belief systems that we oftentimes bring to our process. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense because, of course, if you're doing that, then you can't really ever create something that's unexpected because you're filtering everything through what you think is good or what you think should be. So the best that you can do is create what you think should be or what you think is good. And the deeper creative potentials that could emerge through you will be blocked by your own filtering mechanisms. And in the book, you are often speaking about how, you know, you just mentioned the small self versus
right.
the big self, of course. And in your book, you mention, and it seems that a big part of your understanding is that it's a more of a, say, a universal spirit from which a spiritual artist is creating. You know, they're tapping into a much bigger aspect of themselves in order to allow a creativity to flow. Can you speak a little bit to how you see that higher self or universal spirit?
Yeah, I had a, when I was younger, actually, it's, you know, we talk about life bringing you where you are. I had two really traumatic experiences when I was younger. I was very religious. I was raised Catholic and I went to a Catholic high school and I was very serious about it. And I actually taught CCD and I was very passionate. But when I got older, as I hit puberty, I started realizing that I was gay. And I would go to church and the priest would be up there and saying all sorts of horrible things about being gay. And I couldn't bring it together. I was like, wait a minute, I'm the guy that volunteers to paint the rooms and is teaching the second graders and doing all these activities. How can I be wrong just because of really, it's just one subtle thing. You just attracted to the same sex instead of the opposite sex. Other than that, I think your humanity is intact. And so I walked away from the word God. And at the same time, when I was about 12, I had a traumatic experience with an art teacher who shamed me in front of, and when I say a large room of people, I'm talking about like 1,000 people publicly shamed me about my art skills. And so I walked away from art. So my whole journey goes where I started painting, not until, I didn't go back to painting until I was in my 30s. And that's when I started letting myself explore it. What I feel like is when I was painting, and, you know, I love sharing this with people, is when we all recognize that state of flow when you're in whether, and it doesn't have to be just painting. It can be whether you're running. It can be whatever you're cooking, whatever you're doing. When you feel time slip by and you're in what's called the flow state, I realized that I wasn't there. This is going to sound interesting. I wasn't there alone. Like that there was a voice, a presence coming through me, and that I was actually co-creating. So I consider that voice, back to your question, as the one mind, the source of all things. And because of my upbringing with Catholicism, I realized that some people use different names for that. So I don't want to, I really try to stay away from naming it God, Buddha, you know, Muhammad, but it's all of those. It's the spirit, the realm of all one mind where everything is connected. And so I feel like I'm dancing with that when I connect. And so going back to what you were saying is when we let our belief systems get in the way, or excuse me, our judgment even, we stop that flow of the of a power that sees far beyond what we could even imagine.
I love that you brought in flow because it completely mirrors my experience. I do paint, but not very often. I go through phases where I paint for a while, then I don't paint for a while, you know. But I write a lot. I write books, I write novels, and when I'm writing generally in a flow state. So it's very spontaneous. And when I'm writing at my best, it's flowing from a very profound place in me. And I wrote a book called Higher Self-Expression, which is really all about that. And it's about how true artistry or what I was calling at the time the art of possibility occurs when we're tapped into something way beyond what we know. You know, we're tapped into a mind that's much larger than our knowing mind, and things begin to be expressed through us that are that are just different. They're just new. They're not any kind of a synthesis of things we've done before or variations. They're just something that's coming from a place that's much more original than most of what's in our head. And like you were just saying, I see evidence of that in all kinds of human endeavors. It's like every human endeavor can be taken to the point of artistry, which is, I think, in many ways, the point of flow with a higher being. So the example I used in the book that I loved, because I saw a movie on surfing, I think his name was Jeff Clark. He discovered the big wave called Maverick off of San Francisco. And for a long time, and my memory is that it was years, he would surf it almost every day by himself because it was so far offshore, you couldn't really see it from shore, but he had discovered it somehow, but nobody would believe him that it was really there. And he kept doing it every day because he knew, like, this was amazing. This was something that he could see that nobody could see. And after years, he finally convinced a couple of guys from Santa Cruz to go check it out with him. And then, of course, they started telling everybody. And suddenly, you know, within a month or something, it was, you know, the shoreline was crowded and people were taking boats out there. But I thought, you know, that's what he was exemplifying, was a kind of faith in his vision. He knew this was here. He knew this was significant. Nobody believed him, but he went out there every day. You know, and he did his thing, and eventually it was recognized. And you find so many artists who, they don't get any recognition. They're not getting any approval. They're not getting any affirmation, but they're just so committed to their art. They keep doing it. You know, they keep going and going. And, you know, they don't all end up being recognized as amazing artists, but I feel like they're all tapping into something that dedication to the craft I admire so much. And I would love to hear you speak about how you see dedication to the craft of art.
That's interesting. What you mentioned just now is I love how life always leads you to what you need to discuss or think about at that time, right? If you have a certain issue in your life, suddenly it comes before you in other ways. So I just did a 2-month show here in Dallas. It was a solo show, and it involved an incredible amount of paintings, 24 large paintings called Love Roller Coaster. And for me, it was an expression of showing love on canvas. I took it down yesterday. And while I had a lot of people come, I don't know if I had as many as I visualized. You know, I wanted more. I wanted more. And so I've been processing yesterday and today that feeling of when a project is over, right? We all have it, right? We put a lot of energy. It's like when you write a book, right? And you write the book and then you send it out and some people buy it, but you're like, wait a minute. This book is terrific. Everybody should be buying it, right? And so what I focus on, and I'm glad you brought it up, is I try and I teach my students this. I focus on the experience of writing the book, the experience of putting the show experience. I had an incredible experience. I listened to these beautiful songs. They were very emotional for me. They were about all the realms of love, whether it's good love or bad love. And when I did it, all I can say is on each one of those paintings, I entered flow. I totally gave up my little Chris self, my little ego self, and I entered that higher place and I painted with a higher power and I expressed myself. So from that, it was successful, right? It was successful. And I think when we focus on getting noticed or convincing other people, we are focusing on the material plane, right? We're on the material realm. We want to see, you know, and we all have it, right? We're human. We have that tendency. Where's my award? Where's my recognition? Did I get 500 new followers from that video? You know what? We're always looking for the physical. So I think what I remind myself and what I've done yesterday and today is say, Chris, you're a spiritual artist. Remember that. You focus on the spiritual. What happens once you work through that spiritual process? That's for spirit to decide. That's for God to decide. That's for all that is to decide who hears it. And you know what? Sometimes, like when you write a book, you might reach one person that takes that book and shares it with in a different way. They digest what you did and then they share it. We don't know the results, and we are not, I try not to focus on the results. So I try to focus on, was it a good experience? Did I feel the emotion? Did I get into it? Did I connect with spirit? Did I dance? And so it's funny how you brought that up, because I've been wrestling with that. I'll be honest with you. I'm human. We're human. And I get up and I'm like, oh, did I just waste all that time and effort? Was it really worth it? All I know, and I'll tell your listeners, is just do it. Just be in the state of a spiritual artist. Be present. Feel the connection. Let go of your belief systems that are holding you back, your judgment, and just feel it.
Love what you're saying, because we're all human, and if we're creators of any kind, we do need affirmation.
If you
literally created things and nobody liked it or nobody looked at it, it would really take a lot. You'd have to fall into some degree of self-doubt about it. But the reason I love these examples of dedicated writers, so there's a Portuguese poet I love named Fernando Pessoa. He wrote his whole life with minimal affirmation. Anna Isnin, whom I love, wrote her whole life with very little affirmation until the end. Then she got a lot. It's you could see she wanted affirmation. He wanted affirmation. It was an issue. If you read their biographies, it was kind of an issue their whole life, that people weren't recognizing their art. But their devotion to the art was stronger than their need for affirmation, because they never stopped. Their desire to do art wasn't conditional on affirmation. They were going to do it anyway, even if they were going to complain the whole time, that nobody was recognizing it. And I love that, because I think there are people, many of us, and maybe all of us, if we let go in the way that you're talking about, there's an artistic, creative spirit at the center of reality. The essence of life is creative. And if we, as you said, if we kind of remove the obstacles of belief in the way, we would find our creative muse and our creative medium, because we can't help it. Human beings create. That's what we do.
Right, exactly. And going back to your surfer story, he did it because he had to. It was the feeling of the wave. It was his feeling when he was riding that wave and connecting and trusting his intuition and trusting the inside, the spirit within him. And so that's what I would encourage anybody listening to this, is if you're feeling a lack of validation, it's human. We're human. We're going to feel lack of validation sometimes, but just focus on the experience of the ride, right? Experience of the ride.
Absolutely. And there's a famous art book from about 100 years ago by John Dewey called Art and Experience. And it's a very difficult read, but its point is really awesome. And it's exactly what you're saying, because the book is about, well, what is art? And how do you determine the quality of art? You could say, well, you determine the quality of art by how many people like it in the end, right? Which would mean the most popular piece of art is the best piece. But that's a measuring stick you could use. It historically doesn't seem to be very accurate, because lots of things that are very popular don't turn out to be very lasting. You could use lasting, right? Art that lasts through centuries. I think that's a better measure, but it takes you centuries to figure it out. You can't figure that out today. But what John Dewey was saying is the quality of the art can be found in the quality of the experience of the process of creating it. So if the process of creating it is of a very high quality, the art is a reflection of that quality. And it doesn't matter whether it's recognized or not, but anybody who does recognize it will be recognizing the quality of the process. And the way he described it, which I found really powerful, is that when you're viewing art, there's also a process involved. viewing art isn't just a passive event. You don't just open your eyes and see it. You're engaging with the art, right? You are making the art into something for yourself. You're making the book into something for yourself. And when the it's almost as if when the process of creating it and the process of viewing it are in resonance, you have the strongest connection with the art. So I love what you're saying about the focus is really on the experience of the creation of the creative process more than it's on some measurable quality of the art.
Right. And I think that when a viewer sees it, I love the word authenticity. You know, there's an authenticity if you're really present with it. You know, you can see it. And sometimes it's something you don't even, you're like, well, I don't like dark images, but boy, I can see the authenticity of that painter. Or I don't like childish cartoon images, but I can see that whoever's creating it is truly present to what they're doing. They're there, they're alive. And like you said, when someone views it, just as much are they present. You know, and we all have that experience. I just had the experience, you know, how people walk down the wall and they're, oh, that's nice, that's nice, that's right. You're like, you know, like, no, I'm like, stand there, stare it for, feel it, feel it. So you're right. When those two things align and you find someone that's really authentically presenting and creating, and then someone that's present and really receiving it, it's magic. It's magic.
It's complete magic. And one of those is worth the painting. You
Yes,
know, one person can touch
exactly.
at that depth. So I had an experience some years ago in the Boston Museum of Fine Art. And I was there. They have a lot of Monets. They have a lot of Impressionist paintings. They have a lot of Monets. And they have, I think it's called Cathedral at Sunset. And I remember I was looking at it. And you know, you can kind of tell how important a painting is by how much space they give it, you know, on
Yeah,
the wall.
or the
So I
frame.
knew this must be important, you know. And I was looking at it, and I just wasn't getting it. You know, I was like, I don't. I mean, it's okay. It's kind of blurry, or it's not. And it's really brightly colored, you know, all these yellows. And I said, it almost hurts your eyes to look at. You know, it's so. And then I just got transported. And I thought, oh. He was looking at this cathedral in the brightly reflected light of the sun at sunrise or sunset, whichever it was. And he was trying to paint the experience he was having of he couldn't quite see the cathedral because the light was too bright and was kind of hurting his eyes. And I
Yeah.
realized he somehow magically he captured that experience in the painting. And my impression of it has, you know, it was suddenly it was the most magnificent painting I ever saw. Leo Tolstoy wrote a book, I think it was called What Is Art, but it's all about that. It's all about how can you take an inner experience, which is, you know, not truly communicable in the discursive sense, and yet represent it through art so that that experience is ignited in the viewer. So, and that's what I felt. I experienced seeing that cathedral at sunset or sunrise in the way that Monet was seeing it when he painted it. And I thought, what a magnificent achievement in art.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny if you look at the progression of art, you know, it was very, very realistic. And then you got impressionism, and then you've gotten, you know, these abstract. And for me, the reason I'm challenged by abstract is because it's, I feel like I'm painting from inside out. I'm painting a feeling, and I'm not relying on a tree or the light or a flower to communicate that. I'm re relying on shapes and texture and movement to make a feeling come past. And people, it's a tough sell. Right?
I mean, I love abstract art, and I kind of love the history of abstract art and some of the great painters. And I'm a big fan of Jackson Pollock and the group of Long Island painters, you know, who were exploring abstract art in the 1950s. And a friend of mine was part of that group. She actually recently died, but she was friends with Thomas de Kooning and Jackson Pollock, and she would be in those circles and at those parties, and she was also a painter, and she's a fantastic painter. You know, she would talk about how they were really interested in exactly what you were talking about. So generally speaking, before they would start painting, they would sort of meditate and allow themselves to get empty. And she said Jackson Pollock would sometimes take days preparing to start a painting so that he felt he was sufficiently empty of ideas that he could just flow. And you know, and I, when I heard that from her, I thought, that makes sense. Like I can feel that in their paintings, which is why a Jackson Pollock might not be, it's just not that. It's dripping paint, you know, it's splashed and, you know, and people look at it, they think, well, anybody could do that. But actually anybody can't do that. Anybody can drip paint, but not anybody can drip paint in a way that's as evocative as what Pollock was doing. So I think that's, you know, I think that's what we can get, we can tap into when we, because what I'm hearing from you is you get out of the way, you get all of your ideas out of the way, all of your filtering mechanisms out of the way, and you just let something flow through you. And you love it because of that process, not because else is going to love it or because it's going to sell or anything else, but because it's a way of, to me, that kind of artistic endeavor, and I'm fairly okay with religious terminologies, but it's a way of worshiping the divine. You know, it's me being able to show her, I trust you. I trust your creative process more than I trust my own. And I'm willing to let that be on display, regardless of what anybody else thinks.
It's lovely. It's true. There's a total amount of trust going into there, and a bit of surrender, right? You're surrendering to it. And it's a challenge. You know, we all have our little egos that want to protest and control, and you just go with it and see where it takes you, right?
So I wanted to ask you another question, because you are a painter, you're an artist, you're a spiritual artist, but you also put a lot of energy into supporting other spiritual artists. So how did that happen? And what was the driver to not only want to be a spiritual artist, but want to do what you could to support other people to discover their own spiritual artistry?
You know, I think what I try to teach when I do teach my class, I do retreats. In fact, in 2 weeks, I'm taking 15 people up to the lake and we do exercises, and I mix spiritual in with painting. I think what I try to teach people is to discover what I call your creative DNA, you know, who you are. And I can't tell you why I do it, except for that it's part of me. It's just innate. I'm a teacher. I don't consciously try to be a teacher. It just, I find that I'll start talking to people and I can see that I can connect with them and share ideas. And the way I vocalize things, they get. And so I'm learning. I'm 60. Okay. I just turned 60, right? And I'm learning to just go with it, right? Okay. So, okay. All right. And this talk about trusting to the divine, going to divine intelligence, saying, okay, I'm going to not try. I only started doing this like 2 years ago. Instead of telling God what I wanted to be, I'm letting God tell me what I am. So instead of telling God what I want to be, I'm letting God tell me what I am. And God says, you're a teacher. And so, you know, I wish I could tell you that there was some strategy involved. It's more about just letting go and listening. That's a big thing in my course, is teaching people to listen to what's coming to you. And a lot of times we don't.
I have this term that I like to use called an artist of possibility, by which I mean, I think artistry can be done at all levels, and I think all levels are good, you know. But what I'm particularly interested in is the way that art can expand what's possible. You know, so some art highlights what's possible and shows you the best of what's possible. I think it was Martin Heidegger who talked about art. One function of art is that it demonstrates the best of what's possible. It shows people this is what's possible and it's the best. But some art expands what's possible. It shows you things that could be possible but we're not quite there yet. It starts to expand into the future. And so when you look at, for instance, there's numerous books about how art influences science. So before technological innovation, often there are artistic movements that are exploring that possibility artistically and metaphorically. And as that gets established in consciousness, the kind of more concrete scientific technological innovations start filling it in the material plane. So I feel like this kind of work, what you're doing as a spiritual artist and supporting spiritual artists, and hopefully what I'm doing in a different way, but along the same lines, because I feel like our world is in a crisis. And I think fundamentally, it's a crisis of imagination. We just don't have the expanse of imagination necessary to imagine our way out of a lot of the problems that we face. You know, where our imagination is too limited. We're looking in the same set of potential solutions that haven't worked.
Yeah, exactly.
And somehow I feel like when you're doing the work that you're doing, or, you know, many other people do it in different ways, what we're fundamentally doing is expanding the potentials of human imagination and allowing people to embrace more of the wisdom they have that's beyond what they know. Maybe it's beyond what is culturally recognized as valid, but it allows them to tap in to a higher mind and the imagination of a higher mind. So I think it's incredibly worthwhile. And I would love to hear you respond to that in any way, as someone who is endeavoring to do just that, in my opinion.
Well, I love that. Excuse me, when you say possibilities. And I think you're right. When we look at a problem, I would encourage any listener, if you have a challenge in your life, going within, going to the spiritual realm has more solutions, more flexibility than going to the physical realm. Because the physical realm is limited by just that. It's physical. There's gravity, there's lack, there's friction in the physical realm. But the spiritual realm has such opportunities for new growth and for new discoveries. And so, you know, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor where you might, you know, might, I don't know, if you're like driving down the street and you run out of gas, you might, your instinct is to go to the material. Well, there's a gas station three miles down the road. You get out of the car and you start walking to the gas station. But if you go within to the spiritual realm of possibilities, you might just find that you could actually, for example, this sounds really weird and science is coupled with this, but you could actually get on your phone and call someone to bring you gas, right? Because that's of the mind. That's more flexible than the physical. But we are so trained to be on the physical realm. You know, we're so trained to always look for the answer there, but it's the ideas. I love another term I want to mix in with your possibility is I got this from Deepak Chopra, I think originally, the gap of pure potentiality. Have you heard that term? And for me, when I'm able to go into the easel, go into the art studio and let go of my control and let go of my belief systems and just be in a state, I call it a state of love. I'm in a state of love with spirit. The longer I can extend that time, the gap of pure potentiality, more things can come in, more solutions come to play. So it's a practice to just keep practicing being in that place of, the idea, you know, the idea. So I think you're right with the possibilities, and spirit is full of tons of possibilities.
Absolutely. Well, your example of the car and gas, you know, where you either walk to the gas station or maybe you call someone to bring you gas. And then I was thinking, you know, at another level, maybe you just stay open to this pure potentiality. Maybe there's a reason you ran out of gas here. Maybe you're supposed to go for a walk and discover something. Maybe someone's supposed to stop to help you that becomes your best friend. You know, maybe there's more going on here even than what you can currently imagine. There might be something bigger occurring. You know, who knows?
Well, I love you when you take my metaphor and you make it work better. You're right. You're right. If you step back and look at the spiritual, there might be, maybe there's a car wreck up ahead that you just avoided because you ran out of gas, you know?
That's right. And how many things in life were life-changing for any of us, right? That we couldn't have predicted beforehand. It just happened, but we were available. You see, I guess that's maybe where I'd like to end this interview, that being a spiritual artist means being available for revelation, right? It means being available for something to show up that you couldn't have predicted, that you couldn't have manufactured, that came to you from somewhere you can't understand, but was given to you as a gift to be expressed in the world.
Lovely. I totally agree, and I think it goes back to what we started this whole conversation with, is how did I get here? Just let go. You just let go and start listening instead of directing.